Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, New York Times, ClassicRock.About.com, Rolling Stone, BGO Records, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly.
I've stopped my rambling. I won't do too much gambling these days.
This opening is brought to us by a group called St. Vincent. We'll be hearing more about and from St. Vincent later on in today's program, and St. Vincent will close out today's program as well. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again from www.triviaplaying.com. Question number one, which classic rock band from New England had songs like Seasons of Wither and Love in an Elevator? It's a multiple choice question. And was it answer A, Deep Purple? Answer B, Aerosmith? Answer C, Boston? Or answer D, Steppenwolf? Question number two. What legendary soul singer wrecked his Corvette the very first time he drove it? Big hint coming up. Recognize this artist. Here's his voice. Coming up. No voice. Can you guess who it is, though? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given at the end of today's program. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com. Today in rock history, and today is the weekend of August the 6th through the 8th. What were the number one hits in rock this weekend? Well, back a half a century ago this weekend, it was Brian Hyland, Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini. And back in 1965 this weekend, it was Herman Hermits, I'm Henry VIII, I am. And back in 1971, 6 years later, it was the Bee Gees with How Can You Mend a Broken Heart. And back in 1987 this weekend, it was U2, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. And 18 years ago this weekend, it was Madonna, This Used to Be My Playground at number one. Now, if you were born this weekend, you share a birthday, especially if you were born on August the 6th. Jerry Halliwell, formerly of Spice Girls. She was born on August the 6th, 1972. And also on August the 7th, B.J. Thomas, 1942. And The Edge, David Evans of U2, born on August the 8th, 1961. Deaths in rock history, well, back in 1965, on August the 8th, Julian Adderley, also known as Cannonball Adderley, died on that day. Miscellany in rock history this weekend, well, 55 years ago this weekend, Chuck Berry debuted on U.S. R&B chart with Maybelline. And back in 1960, Billboard reports that the English Decca label has scrapped 25,000 copies of Ray Peterson's Tell Laura I Love Her as too tasteless and vulgar for the English sensibilities. And back in 1963 this weekend, Beach Party, the original Beach movie with Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello, premieres. Year later, 1964, Time magazine headline reads, Beatles Blow It. The review of A Hard Day's Night says, avoid this film at all costs. Back in 1964, that same year, This Weekend, new single released by in the U.S. by Young World Singers called Ringo for President. Ringo Starr comments, I don't believe I will have the time. Back in 1966, This Weekend, Simon and Garfunkel release Dangling Conversation. And back in 1968, This Weekend, Aretha Franklin's I Say a Little Prayer hits the charts. Back in 1973, This Weekend, it was Stevie Wonder seriously injured when his car collides with a lorry in North Carolina. He is in a coma for 4 days. And 36 years ago this weekend, Peter Wolf, ex-J. Geils Band member, married Faye Dunaway. This next article is brought to us by NewsObserver.com, published on the 1st of August, 2010. Entitled, Singer Al Jarreau Discharged from French Hospital. This is from Marseille, France. A French cardiologist who's been treating Al Jarreau says the Grammy Award-winning singer has been discharged from the hospital more than a week after he was admitted. The 70-year-old American singer was placed in intensive care on July 23 after suffering breathing problems in the Alps and was later moved by helicopter to La Timone Hospital in Marseille. The incident forced Jarreau to cancel several dates on his European concert tour. Jean-Louis Bonnet, chief of the cardiology unit at La Timone Hospital, said Sunday that Jarreau wants to be continuing with his tour. He wants to return to the stage and see his fans, Bonnet said, adding that he advised Jarreau not to push himself too hard. Jarreau has won Grammys in jazz, pop, and R&B categories. This next article is brought to us by Daily Variety magazine, entitled Stones in Exile. It was published on the 27th of May, 2010, by Rob Nelson. Cleaning up the mists that have swirled like pot smoke around the recording of Exile on Main Street almost 40 years ago, the Rolling Stones hour-long docu, Stones in Exile, unavoidably diminishes the record's mystique while making ever non-fans want to play or buy it pronto. Only at the end does the pick get down to contextualizing Exile as a grungy classic, the better perhaps to send its audience out shopping. Still, there's great material in this vintage footage stuff reverie, including images of the torn and frayed slips of paper that the group shuffled William Burroughs style to create Casino Boogie. Telling of the Stones' 1971 tax-induced exile to the south of France, where they holed up and played hard in guitarist Keith Richards' rented chateau, the docu owes heavily to photographer Dominique Tarle and filmmaker Robert Frank, whose evocative pictures of the period take the place of talking heads. Interviewed off-camera, Richards meets the drug charge head-on, claiming that with a hit of smack, I could walk through anything and not give a damn. Tech package varies according to source material, but is plenty sufficient for the forthcoming DVD. This next article is called On the Rock and Road. It was published in NewsandObserver.com on December 6, 2009. Graham Forbes' credentials are certainly in order for writing a memoir titled Rock and Roll Tourist. Northumbria University Press, $15.95. It's an up-close look at a hectic world of various musicians and crew members on the road. The 59-year-old native of Glasgow, Scotland, was guitarist for the Incredible String Band, a folk rock band with a large following in Europe and America in the 1960s and 70s. Now semi-retired and a freelance guitarist bassist, Forbes plays in the house band for the UK equivalent of American Idol, and a few weeks ago played a six-night gig in Dublin, Ireland, with vocalist Marsha Hunt. He also manages his son's Scottish rock band, I Am Darkwater, and writes travel articles for the British press while dividing his time between Scotland and Florida. In an interview last month, he talked about changes in touring. Because people can download and copy CDs for nothing from the internet, record sales are a small thing now. Bands used to tour to promote their releases. Now it's all about merch stands at concerts selling T-shirts for $20 a pop that costs $5 to print. And look at ticket sales. Seeing a major act used to cost the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes. Now a show costs a month's worth of groceries. So bands are touring more. People like live music and can now pay to see bands that might once have been difficult to see. Touring acts like AC/DC, U2, or Bruce Springsteen usually take 2 years for a tour because so much money is involved in setting them up. It takes the first year to make back the cost. The second year is when they make their money. The internet also changed things personally for musicians on the road. It's now dead easy for people to keep in touch. They can call their loved ones every night. Being on tour isn't as lonely as it used to be, even though they're out on tour longer now. Have you noticed how you don't hear Homeward Bound songs anymore? That's one reason those aren't being written anymore.
I'm going home, home, back to the place, home, where I belong, home, down peace of mind.
Travel tips. The main tip you learn is an old one but true. Travel light. Musicians don't carry half the stuff ordinary tourists carry. Musicians often don't carry loads of socks or other things they can buy cheaply anywhere. They often grab T-shirts straight off their merch stands. They take small bags. If you're flying a lot, the last thing you want to be doing is standing at luggage carousels in an airport. Also, get up to the airports early. It's crazy to do otherwise. Mike Heron, one of the founders of the Incredible String Band, takes a notebook and fills it with photos of all the stuff he likes and with photos of things he may need, like a pharmacist or a doctor. When he needs something, he just points to a picture. It's actually very clever and works in places like Iceland, where they stay. Quite often, the road crew uses the band bus for sleeping more than the musicians. They'll take the bus to the venue ahead of time and work ridiculous hours to get everything set up. It's hard work. I've known bands that go through road crews every few weeks because they drop from exhaustion. Bands generally stay in hotels not far from the venue. In America, if you go to the Marriotts, Sheratons, and so on, there's a good chance of finding the band checking in at 11 o'clock or midnight. That's certainly the case in Europe. A promoter may have 30 to 40 bands coming through a town in 1 year, and promoters that book the bands generally use the same hotels. In New York, the Chelsea used to be infamous and probably still is. The Sheraton at Times Square is also popular. Favorite clubs. I live in Sarasota, where there are so many great music bars. I can play three or four nights a week if I want. The 5 o'clock club, the 5-0, is just up the road. The Paradiso in Amsterdam is friendly, though most people there are stoned out of their minds. Amsterdam is a laid-back town, if you catch my meaning, but there's never trouble there. There's the Marquee and Dingwalls in London. In Glasgow, it's King Tut's Wawa Hut, where Oasis was discovered. The bar circuit is important, as that's where young bands learn to play. British guitar players on the bar circuit tend to be younger, more exciting and passionate, but not as technically proficient as what you'd see in America. Festivals, UK versus US. One difference is climate. It's more predictable in the States. In the UK, festivals frequently end up as a mud bath. The annual festival at Glastonbury is notorious for that. European festivals attract a much younger and rowdier crowd. Festivals over there aren't really suitable for little kids. A lot of things happen you wouldn't want them to see. A lot of alcohol and God knows what else is consumed. I avoid playing festivals in Europe except for one, the Rhythm Festival in London, which is not as rowdy. American festivals are more civilized. People bring deck chairs. You'd be laughed at if you tried that in Europe. The food at American festivals is vastly superior to what's at festivals in Europe. I was just at the Sarasota Blues Festival with Little Feet. The food was great. The atmosphere was easy. Places he plays. I like L.A., but prefer New York. Spain is great. So is Italy. Anthrax prefers Paris. They really love it, which you may find surprising. You don't think of heavy metal bands being in artistic places. But many musicians have surprising tastes. You remember Ginger Baker, who was the drummer in Cream? He was totally into olive farming in Italy. This next article comes to us from Jim Salter, Associated Press, published on July 26, 2010. Pigeon droppings halt Kings of Leon concert, St. Louis. Heavy storms and scorching temperatures have failed to deter rock bands from performing at an outdoor stadium in St. Louis, but a bombardment of pigeon droppings proved too much for the Kings of Leon. The band halted the Friday night concert at the Verizon Wireless Amphitheater after three songs when the infestation of birds in the arena's rafters dropped their onslaught of feces. A statement from the band's management company, Vector Management, said bassist Gerard Folowill seemed to be a particular target of the pigeons, whose droppings were a potential health hazard. I'm surprised they stayed on for as many songs as they did, Andy Mendelson of Vector Management said in the statement. Jared was hit several times during the first two songs. On the third song, when he was hit in the cheek and some of it landed near his mouth, they couldn't take it any longer. It's not only disgusting, it's a toxic health hazard, Mendelson said. They really tried to hang in there. We want to apologize to our fans in St. Louis, and we'll be back as soon as we can. The crowd grew restless after the band walked off. Then an announcement was made that the show was over for safety reasons. The concert promoter, Live Nation, did not respond to interview requests on Monday, but said fans will get a free full refund. Mendelson said band representatives have been warned of a significant pigeon infestation in the rafters, but were told efforts were being made to correct the problem. The opening bands, the Postellis and the Stills, performed and were apparently hit with their share of droppings, too. We couldn't believe what the Postellis and the Stills looked like after their sets, Folowill said in a statement. We didn't want to cancel the show, so we went for it. We tried to play. It was ridiculous. Health experts say pigeon droppings have been associated with several diseases. Fungal diseases with symptoms that can include fatigue and fever. Also a rare infectious disease characterized by fever, rash, chills, headache, and sometimes pneumonia. Only about 50 cases in the U.S. are reported annually. The Kings of Leon performed Saturday night in Chicago. Their tour was continuing Monday in Cleveland and Wednesday in Toronto. The venue in Maryland Heights, Missouri, had another infamous incident nearly two decades ago. In July 1991, Guns N' Roses frontman Axl Rose became enraged when a concert goer was spotted filming the show. Rose jumped into the audience and tackled the fan, then returned to the stage, blamed security, and said, "I'm going home." The abrupt end to that concert set off a riot that left dozens injured. The concert goer sued Rose, and a settlement was reached after the trial began. Well, this next article comes to us from the DenverWestward.com. Questions and Answers with Annie Clark of St. Vincent, our featured artist today, written by Tom Murphy and published on the 12th of February, 2010. Performing as St. Vincent, Annie Clark is a writer of lush, adventurous pop music. Her stage name is a reference to St. Vincent's Catholic Medical Center, where the Welsh poet Dylan Thomas died in 1953. It's the place where poetry comes to die, she has said. That's me. As a teenager, she was the tour manager for her uncle's band, Tuck and Patty, where she learned not only a great deal about the music business, but also a bit about musicianship and effective performance. In her early 20s, Clark became a member of the Polyphonic Spree, and later on joined Sufjan Stevens' band for his 2006 tour. The following year, Clark released her first solo album, Marry Me, named after a line from the TV show Arrested Development, a promising debut filled with effervescent melodies and experimental flourishes throughout.
Marry me, John, marry me, John, I'll be so good to you. You won't realize I'm gone. Marry me, John, marry me, John, I'll be so sweet to you. You won't realize I'm gone. You won't realize I'm gone.
The follow-up and Clark's latest album, Actor, appeared 2 years later and garnered a great deal of acclaim for Clark. Actor is a sonically and artistically mature work that reveals an uncommon depth of artistic imagination and ambition in songwriting and musical conceptualization. We had a chance to speak with Clark about the influence of works in different media on Actor, her aesthetic approach to music, and the concept of the provisional ego. Tom Murphy asks, what is it about the work of David Mamet that you find particularly interesting, and how has it informed the writing of lyrics for Actor? Annie Clark says, I'm a fan of logic. I like his Midwestern pragmatism, to be honest. There's something really gritty about having his sort of really sound architecture behind dramatic form. I'm also just a fan of taking concepts that are supposed to be for other mediums, from art, from theater, and applying those concepts to what I do. My lyrics are more influenced by things that I was reading, like Philip Roth, Bukowski, and Cormac McCarthy. There is a gracefulness in the brutality of the language of all of those people that I really like. I heard that during rehearsals for one of David Mamet's plays, he was sitting in the audience while the actors were on stage and drinking muscle milk and lifting weights as he was supposed to be watching. But he was so astute that he wasn't even watching, but he would stop them and give them notes that they were dead on. Article skips down. Question. Why do you like things that are unsettling and creepy? Answer. You might have to ask my psychoanalyst. I like when things give you the willies. I like when things come out of nowhere and blindside you a little bit. I think any person who gets panic attacks or has an anxiety disorder can understand how things can all of a sudden turn very quickly. I think I'm sublimating that into the music.
You're a supplement, you're a salve, you're a bandage for it all. I can quit you, cut it out, you're patient, I am love.
Someone recently asked me what your music sounded like, and the closest thing that came to my mind were the weirder end of Peter Gabriel's early solo material, David Byrne, David Bowie, and Beth Orton. How would you describe your own music? Answer, I don't have a stock answer for how I would describe my music. It's kind of like asking a parent, how would you describe your child? I love doing it. It's my favorite thing in the world. One thing I will say is I really appreciate your ear. Those people you rattled off are dream comparisons and people I so respect and admire. The article skips down. It doesn't seem as though there are nearly enough women performing music in general, and especially experimental music such as you do. What advice might you give to a young woman considering getting into making more challenging music? Answer. I would say the same thing to anyone. Follow what makes you happy and inspired. Don't be intimidated. I'm not exactly what records I'd recommend, except for the early Brian Eno solo collection, and start there. I do what I do because I really like it, but find out what really inspires you and go for it. In 2008, Clark was nominated for 3 Plug Independent Music Awards, New Artist of the Year, Female Artist of the Year, and Music Video of the Year. On March the 6th, 2008, she won the Plug Female Artist of the Year award.
There's a black rainbow above my house. Match the curtains in the floor.
We'll close out today's program with St. Vincent singing Paris is Burning. But first, this article. This next article is a review of Maura O'Connell's Naked with Friends, a Sugar Hill recording. And it's written by Tone Moss, an ode to the human voice. This was published in Ode Magazine, May 2010. Why don't you play an instrument? Why don't you write your own song? Singer Maura O'Connell has been asked the same question dozens of times. Because I'm just a singer, was her standard reply, but it didn't sit right with her. Why be ashamed of just a singer? To counter all possible prejudice concerning her vocal abilities, O'Connell decided to record an album featuring nothing but the human voice. And since one voice is rather sparse for a whole album, she asked a number of musical friends to assist her in this adventurous undertaking. The result is wonderful. Naked with Friends is one jubilant ode to the human voice. Though O'Connell's impressive vocals may be the CD's centerpiece, her guests are quite famous in their own right. Apart from country diva Dolly Parton and bluegrass goddess Alison Krauss, some of Ireland's leading ladies of folk are present, including Moira Brennan and Mary Black. Together with Irish singer-songwriter Paul Brady, O'Connell performs a stunning duet sung in Gaelic, but the most remarkable voice belongs to Jerry Douglas, a world-famous virtuoso on the dobro, personator slide guitar, who has never before been caught singing in public. The repertoire selected for Naked is largely traditional, which makes sense, given that most folk music used to be performed without instrumental backing. But thanks to inventive vocal arrangements, songs by contemporary artists such as Cheryl Wheeler and Janis Ian sound as if they were meant to be sung precisely like this. A chilling interpretation of Joan Armatrading's Weakness in Me, performed by O'Connell, in her most naked of voices, wonderfully demonstrates the closeness of the connection between emotion and voice. Breathtakingly beautiful. So, how'd you do on the trivia questions that opened today's program? Question number 1 was, which classic rock band from New England had songs like Seasons of Wither and Love in an Elevator? It was not Deep Purple, it was not Boston, it was not Steppenwolf, but it was, answer B, Aerosmith. And second question, what legendary soul singer wrecked his Corvette the very first time he drove it? Despite the instrumental hint I gave you, you should have been able to get it. Was it Otis Redding? No. James Brown? No. Ted Nugent? No. It was, in fact, Ray Charles. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next time.
The soot of power, they say. I'm on your side.